Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Tim is swinging a lot more first pitches this year. Pineda comes home with a first pitch that Tim drills to left field. And welcome to the ballpark. Bring him home 1-0.
I think you and I set that up pretty well.
Goodness. Jake to right field. That's well hit into the alleyway it goes. And that's over the line and gone. 1-2. Mercedes saw it beautifully. Up the gap in left center, this lead will grow. Abreu scores, and a pinch hit RBI dagger for Mercedes, and a 4-2 lead. The fun never stops.
With Bernstein and Rahimi.
Fun sure hasn't stopped lately for the White Sox, and Jason Benetti has been describing it alongside both Len Casper and Steve Stone of late. He is on Twitter at Jason Benetti. He is on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. Jason, how are you?
Good, Dan. A pleasant good morning to you and yours.
Jason, good to hear from you. I just want to say that was such an enjoyable game to watch yesterday for a million reasons. Day baseball, Southside facing the Twins, a close game. And I really enjoyed the way you called Lance Lynn's strikeout and the at-bat with Garver to end the fifth inning. When you were able to put that all together the way you did, what has that been like for you?
So, which part of it, that at bat or overall the White Sox at all the winning?
I mean, let's go with both. But I thought that was just one of those moments where you felt the intensity, even in this May game during the day against the Twins randomly in the fifth inning, and it felt like a playoff moment. Kind of symbolizes that, I think, overall, too.
Yeah, sometimes you sit and you wonder, hey, you know, how big is the moment? Am I over underselling it? Am I matching the moment? Then the strikeout happened, and Lance Lynn went absolutely nuts. I mean, his reaction was like, angry grizzly bear attacks baseball game. And it was pretty awesome. So Brooks said this yesterday when he was talking about the capacity growing. Brooks Boyer, the crowd has been really energized, even at 8,000, 9,000. So it's been really easy to get excited about the team because I think across baseball, honestly, and I've done a couple other games, across baseball, the people who have been in the ballpark are really lively engaged. So that's been great. And then overall, I mean, this starting pitching has been so ridiculous and so able to miss bats and miss barrels that it's just been, as somebody who has understood over the past couple years and learned more and more about how difficult pitchers make it on hitters. To me, it's fun watching the pitching laboratory that the Sox have going on in terms of their starters on the mound developing as craftsmen.
What specifically, when you start talking about the development and engineering of pitches, what stands out to you amid the whole team arsenal?
Carlos Rodon becoming a four-pitch pitcher. Before it was fastball, hard slider, and now he's dotting the changeup and he's sprinkling in the curveball. We're going to talk a little bit today about Lucas Giolito, who evidently has done some tinkering over the past couple days, had some good days with his slider, according to a text I got from Ethan Katz this morning. And Lance Lynn just being a tunneling expert when he got here, right? He throws all fastballs basically with a curveball every once in a while as the sugar on top. And to me, it's five different guys. And Dylan, Dylan Cease learning to throw, and this is what I miss about being in the clubhouse. Post game on Dylan Cease's start a couple starts ago, he told Steve and me about his release point and his aiming point on his curveball being Yasmani Grandal's helmet. And that's the type of thing that you watch the game and you say, man, he really has found that, and you can see him doing that. So there are five guys in there in the starting rotation who are messing around with stuff and getting better because of it, and I love watching it.
Well, and Jason, even talking to you, talking with Ethan Katz is huge for us because we haven't heard a lot from him, relatively speaking, during this season. So having those takeaways and then telling us about them even right now is pretty important for that same access reason. What have you discussed with him, other details like that, that you think have really shown, especially over the past month or so?
You know, it's weird by text because it's just sort of a smattering here and there of stuff. And I'm hopeful that with the CDC's new recommendations at some point soon, especially considering Steve and I are both fully vaccinated, that at some point it won't be a smattering of text messages when I see something interesting on Baseball Savant, and it'll be in-person conversations. I'm very hopeful that we'll be on the road at some point this season as well, instead of in a stuffy studio doing these games. So, you know, I don't have a ton at this point. I just have a couple things that I've asked here and there for broadcast and background, but it helps guide me in terms of what I'm watching and what Steve and I put on the air.
I've looked at some offensive numbers that I've been following pretty closely with just the crazy run differential that they have, and I keep asking myself, and I guess I should ask you, about the sustainability of their run scoring. The White Sox currently are hitting at a .326 batting average of balls in play, by a mile, tops in baseball. And before you jump all over it, I understand that it is possible to out-hit BABIP when you do hit the ball hard everywhere. Good hitters have a high batting average of balls in play either because they're fast or because they hit the ball hard, and it's difficult for people to make a play on it. That's not the case with the White Sox. The White Sox are 17th in MLB in hard contact rate. They are 18th in line drive percentage. So I'm a little bit concerned about the disparity that's inherent in those stats. Are you?
Having done all the StatCast shows I've done, I am. And I have to be. But I also have hunted for reasons to believe that the winning is sustainable. Like the offense being sustainable is one thing, but is the winning sustainable? And that's the question I've been asking myself. And part of what I really like is, I talked about this the other day on the broadcast briefly, but the Sox, I think right now, are like +3 in net home runs given up versus hit. And when the pitchers are preventing the home run ball better than the offense is not hitting the home run ball, I guess is the sentence I ended up with there. But when the net home run is positive, that's generally a pretty good sign. The other thing that I think is interesting about this team is I don't think this ground ball rate is sustainable either. But I also don't think it's going to stay where it is for the year. I do know the Sox have ground ball hitters, but to me, for his career, and the numbers bear this out, Tim Anderson is not a ground ball hitter, and he's like 64% this year. He's not that dramatic of a ground ball hitter, I guess I would say. So, yeah, I have wondered how sustainable is the offense. But there's the other piece of it, and Steve and I have talked about it a little bit, and Len and I have too, that if the home run ball, which was down, what, 8% in April, if the home run ball remains muted, I was driving, there's a pocket always when I'm going to the ballpark, and I just ran into it. I was just saying, in 2021, is the fact that the Sox don't hit that many home runs more sustainable than in recent years if the baseball is that different and the story we've seen on Fangraphs and the other things we've seen, like maybe that is something that's important to this White Sox team. Maybe this offense is very well crafted for 2021.
Well, and then let's color that with what we heard from Frank Menichino using colorful language that we all just loved when he says, F the home run ball, hit for 300, talking about giving advice to Andrew Vaughn. How does that affect what you're seeing, too? And do you think there is that relationship there when you hear him say that advice?
Well, I think that was, so I heard the headline and we played the headline, and Frank, like, when Frank talked, I love listening to it because I just want to hear him talk. But I do think that's in part motivation for his hitter to not worry about the home run ball. I think when you're that young and you're Andrew Vaughn, you may have a tendency to get concerned that it's not happened yet. So I think that might have been a little bit more motivation than it is, hey, I don't want to hit home runs. Like the home run ball in Major League Baseball over the past bunch of years, it's been like three quarters of the time when you hit more home runs than your opponent, you win the game. And so that's why I go back to the pitchers preventing home runs. The White Sox are okay doing what they're doing BABIP-wise if the pitchers continue to prevent the home run ball. I really, truly believe that. And that's from somebody who embraces and loves StatCast and what the home run ball can do for you offensively. So it's like, which race will be run faster, the Sox to the home run ball or opponents to the home run ball?
I'm starting to look at the trade deadline now and thinking about possible fortification and not giving up the farm. I'm talking about working more around the edges here and maybe trying to pick over some teams that declare that they're out of it. I don't know how many there will be, but I'd love to cut back on the Billy Hamilton usage. I'd love to cut back on the Jake Lamb usage. I don't mind having Billy Hamilton on my team as a pinch runner, especially in extra innings and a defensive replacement, or having Jake Lamb with maybe a little bit of versatility and concerns about handedness, but I'd like to make them less important, and I would like to put some people there in front of Tony La Russa that maybe are clearly better. Do you think it's reasonable to think that it's time to start at least looking at some rosters and circling some names?
I think it's reasonable if the White Sox in the next month and a half continue to be one of the top five teams in a very parodic American League. So I do believe that you should think about that if you're Rick Hahn and you're Kenny Williams and you're the whole front office. In that case, I also, I believe you said this on Twitter, I don't think you want to mortgage anything of your window and shorten your window because you have to go chase something this year because of injury. Because you're going to assume, and I know the pec muscle is a question and the hip for Luis and what the rehab is like and all that. But if you believe left and center are occupied, I don't think you want to go get somebody to occupy those positions. I agree with you. I think it would be for a bench bat or in case of injury, another bullpen arm or something like that. And I don't believe the price would be necessarily all that high unless, as you insinuated there, unless everybody in the American League feels like they can go get a wild card spot and nobody's trading and there's just a dearth of supply. So to me, I don't think it's a big splash at the deadline. I think it's just one or two pieces that might really help in terms of like say, just hypothetically, say Eddie Rosario, that type of guy was available for a little bit less because of whatever reason. Like maybe there's a gap filler. I don't think it ends up being Joey Gallo. I think it ends up being the fourth outfielder type. Somebody like the season that Mike Tauchman had with the Yankees a couple years ago. Not exactly that. Somebody with a little bigger of a name, but that would be intriguing to me.
And then, Jason, the last time we had you on, it was after the no-hitter with Carlos Rodon and Zach Collins, and it was amazing radio. But you also let a nugget loose that I did not know. You said that you were a former intern of Boers and Bernstein. So it's a Friday, and we do score tales sometimes. So I need you to tell me a score tale about being Dan Bernstein and Terry Boers' intern.
Oh, my gosh. I'm debating whether or not I want, there's one I'll tell you off the air, but I think the end run of my internship was two things. Number one, literally the first day, I want to say it was Dan, but it was Dan or one of the, maybe it was like Dan Zampillo, took me to the copier to show me what to do to like get clippings put on a piece of paper and like do all of these things with the copier to make sure that the show prep was good. And I had never used a copier before in my entire life. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I nodded and I said, yeah, absolutely, I can do that. And then I went and tried to do it for a couple times. And it took me like an hour with the copier for something that should take literally 30 seconds. And I think I just stopped being asked to do it. My job essentially was to come in, marvel at Dan at the computer banging out the daily crossword puzzle, and then sit there and say something stupid about Conrad Bain or some other early 80s reference or something. Like, literally, I was a terrible intern. I don't know that I did anything other than one bit. The story that I would tell, but it involves my current employer, but I got something on the air. My only idea that landed was, it was a Blazing Saddles bit involving Harvey Korman that I suggested we do audio-wise regarding a trade that got made by my current employer. It was, I think the statute of limitations is up for them to fire me over it because it was 18 years ago. But I got, like, Harvey Korman's listing all the bad guys in Blazing Saddles, and my idea was we should do that regarding the guys the White Sox just traded for.
Bushwhackers, muggers, buggerers. Yes. That was yours?
And that got on the air. Yes, that was my only contribution to the show. And I believe it was, I think it was the Carl Everett, Roberto Alomar thing.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
I didn't remember it was your call. It was great.
You just subtly said that, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, we still have to do this interview. So I had to ask you about this the next time we talked.
Yeah, and I think Dan especially, I think since it's been so long, I can say that without reprisal. But it was like, you don't remember it because you did something interesting and creative every day. It was literally my only contribution to the show.
Yeah, I just remember you being such an affable presence that we didn't really care. You were just kind of fun to have around. You're always a good audience, and I think it just it assuaged our prickly and sensitive egos.
Well, yeah, and I was terrible at the copier. The headline is affable but terrible at the copier.
Well, and
nothing. I promise you, I did nothing.
But we always made fun of the fact that used to be called the Agate, and the Agate was the Xeroxed compilation of stats and standings and things that were given to the host to sort of slap down in front of him to idiot-proof things. And I always generally didn't need it because I would bring a Tribune Sports section in there with me, and that was just sort of my little security blanket. But the fact that we needed it at all, with computers in front of us, is ridiculous. The fact that we were using chopped down trees to do it, the fact that we just made, no one ever thought, should we have interns do it? It just became a part of what interns did. And we never really thought till later, like, why are we still doing this? We don't need to.
Yeah, I all I know is I learned how little I know about the copier, how much I needed to know about the crossword, and that Kitchen Confidential is a great book.
Yeah.
That's what I took from that internship.
No, I mean, sounds like a success to me.
See where it got you.
It was awesome.
Yep, see where it got you. Johnny Carmelo.
See what
out.
It did? See what happened? I did the Friday in like 6 minutes today, Dan Bernstein. because of you.
I haven't done it yet. I haven't done it yet. And if it's an easy Friday, that's good. That might make for a fun re-cluing. But there's so many good puzzles out there, man. There's so many good non-New York Times puzzles out there. Great work being done that Will Shorts has nothing to do with. Don't get me started here. I could go off all day on the issues there. With
I know
the,
you
the
got
Times
a thing,
puzzle.
But let me say, I want to say this though. I've gotten to know the assistant editor Sam Izerski, and he's an awesome dude. So let me just
how do you know Sam?
That.
How do you know Sam?
Sam, I emailed him out of the blue about 2 years ago to talk about construction, and we ended up having lunch in Chelsea in New York City, and he's become a friend.
Oh, how cool is that? Please send my best. Tell him I enjoy his work, and I love seeing his name at the top of a puzzle because I know I'm always in for something fun.
Yeah, his clues are great, man. Yep. I know this isn't sports radio, but his clues are amazing.
They are. And if you ever get the chance, do you do any Tim Croce at Club 72?
I Got a Name is one of my favorites. I don't know. Is that Jim's evil twin?
No, his name is Tim Croce, and it's Club 72 Crosswords.
Tim Croce.
And it is, okay. You talk about some oblique cluing where you might kind of get mad, but once you get his vibe, once you kind of grok what he's doing, it is a very specific acquired taste, but one you'll begin to crave.
I'm totally, totally in for that. You should have Sam on when the Sox play the Orioles. He's a huge Orioles fan, by the way. But Club 72, I'm doing it.
Yep, yeah, give it a shot. It's like Saturday-level difficulty, but the cluing is bananas.
Love it. Love
All right,
it.
Man. All right, drive safe. Good talking. Bye. Be well.
Thanks, Jason.
The great Jason Benetti. It makes watching these games and having these people. God, we keep saying it, Layla, but all these announcers, like, just Boog is such an easy listen, whether he's working with JD or Dempster. And, you know, every way we consume these games now has just been so pleasurable. You know, even when they're not winning, just the way we get our baseball is great.
Well, in like Triple Crown time, let's just have national broadcast expert in hockey and horse racing Eddie O on the morning show. You know, that happened before our show. Like, it really is awesome. And I'm serious. I've never been that hyped for a random fifth inning in May in a day game where the team was likely to win. And Jason's calling that game like it was a playoff atmosphere. And it really felt that way. It just really symbolized his enthusiasm and what this team is bringing right now. And the random fifth inning at bat against Garver that was 8 pitches.
But that's the mark of a really good broadcaster, because he's not faking that. You know, he's channeling what he's feeling there. So that's real. And if it's phony, it would feel phony. You'd get that, like, the Chip Carey vibe. Swung on, belted, caught out there. You know, and it works because he's bringing you something that's real and making you feel what he and other people there are feeling. You see this tweet from John Greenberg?
No. Yeah, I'm sure it's awesome.
Some ribald sports talk on 670 The Score as Dan Bernstein talks puzzles with Jason Benetti. Hey, man.
Listen,
every once in a while.
Greenberg did us a solid in doing a story that pretty much was only for us, in John Daniel's brother being the rabbi at a synagogue that is familiar to your family.
That's my childhood synagogue. That's where I was consecrated, bar mitzvahed, confirmed, and it was the rabbi emeritus who married us.
So the fact that Greenberg did a Rangers Dan Bernstein synagogue story, I really have no complaints with him, except for the fact that he took a picture of the White Sox press box pub mix that I love so much that I haven't had in a year and a half. And I'm very angry about this.
Well, track it down. See who their supplier is and go buy some.
He had the container. He had it in the picture. And I've had like a million mentions since, so I got to look it back up. But yeah, Greenberg's doing good work for us. He's on the team.
When we come back, I want you to hear some stuff that Lucas Giolito had to say. He was on with Jim Rome, and he was pretty truthful about where he's come, what his journey has been to get to this point. So you'll hear from the White Sox ace next on The Score.
Congratulations to Basin Genetti.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
While we're talking White Sox, why not hear the thoughts of Lucas Giolito, who we've always put in that category of an athlete who's really good at talking about what he does and who he is and how he feels. Some athletes are not, and he is. And he is really open about how he talks about his process at the field, away from the field. And he was on the Jim Rome show recently. And we left the question in here because I think it's important about what he's had to deal with to get to this point.
You know, we keep going back, Lucas, to 2018. That was obviously such a pivotal and critical part of your career. You said something that I thought was really interesting in the offseason back in 2018, quote, after a bad start, I would read Instagram DMs of people saying, you should go kill yourself. And I would get emotional and I would let it get to me. And now it's like, well, that bleep comes with the territory. So like, whatever, it doesn't matter. End of quote. I understand this, but I've never understood this, right? So how did you go about getting to that point where you make sure that that doesn't get to you? And do you still read that stuff? How do you approach it?
Yeah, it's a completely different approach now than before. You know, back then I was pitching for results. You know, I wanted to do well. I wanted to be able to, you know, survive at the big league level and have good enough numbers that I'd be able to stay and be able to keep developing. But, I soon realized that if you go in with that approach, it's not going to work out for you. And so I basically just had to change the mindset, became a lot more process oriented, really honed in on having a very reliable routine day to day in the off season and in season, and putting all of my thought, all of my focus into the preparation. So when it comes time to perform, you just kind of let your body, let your mind kind of go to work and do what they do. You know, you've done all the preparation necessary so that you can go out there and be your best. And once I really bought into having that attitude, I started to worry less and less about all that outside noise, you know, as far as, you know, fans being mad or anything like that. You know, it becomes much more internal. It's a much better way to live. That's for sure.
Lucas, I appreciate that response so much. I love that response. And I love that you're talking about things like mindset and process and preparation, and you committed to these things and you're so much better on and off the field now as a result. But if you're doing those things now and you're having that kind of success, I'm curious, what was your mindset and process and preparation like prior to committing to all of this?
There wasn't a lot of it. It was changing constantly. I was searching. You know, I'd be trying new exercises in the gym, like on a weekly basis. I'd be trying to do something new mechanically in between every single start. And then I'd, you know, go out there and kind of carry that like unsure attitude out on the field. And it showed, you know, falling behind in counts, not pitching confidently. And yeah, it was kind of like that kick in the butt I needed to realize, hey, like this isn't the way to go about this. And, you know, that's when I really committed to the change.
Wow. How cool is some of that?
It's telling. And he's talked about a lot of that stuff in a way that shouldn't sound unfamiliar. But to hear him say that and what Rome says about how he was spoken to, just why? I will never understand what possesses people to do that kind of thing to somebody just doing their job. But for him to search for something and then find it, I'll never get tired of hearing that story. I love that song.
Sounds to me, a lot of that stuff, I'm really mindful of golfers. And the difference is that golfers don't have that kind of fan reaction because they're not part of a team. They're not wearing a uniform of a team, and they're able to exist in a little different place in that regard. But that idea of routine, of finding proper training exercises, of getting yourself right, and it's why we see even the best of the best go away for a while. You know, Luke Donald or Jordan Spieth, or famously with David Duval, and what has happened to when you see somebody come back to form. That's why it's been so satisfying to watch Jordan Spieth, to see him get it back, to figure things out. You can only imagine. I mean, explain it, when you tell a golfer, they know how difficult that can be, and how little separates number one from number 100, that then dealing with people on social media telling you to kill yourself because you happen to pitch for their team. Can you imagine?
No, I can't. And that's why I question it. But for him, who seems like such a self-aware person and a person who listens to people when they talk to him, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. So you hear that, and you're right about the golf aspect. I was immediately thinking that when he said focusing on the result rather than the process, because that's golf 101, right? Focusing on your result rather than the actual shot. And he mentions that in a way that just makes a lot of sense. And then I also was reminded of what Liam Hendricks told us. The idea of focusing on the part of the strike zone where the hitter can't hit it. And that made things a lot easier.
And yet, it's the opposite of the way Ian Happ has talked, where he said, keep it about the process and don't fixate on the result. When he said it's about whether or not a ball drops in for a hit, sometimes you can hit it. All you can do is try to square it up and hit it hard. And if you get a bleeder that ends up, or a bloop double or a bleeder single, yeah, you made it and you take it. But he said you can never be unsatisfied with a hard hit ball because of how you're going about getting to that point.
That's the point. And Giolito has often used the phrase visualizations. You've heard him say, I go through my visualizations.
Oh, yeah.
He's letting you in on what that is right there. And even Jason Benetti, moments ago, talking about Dylan Cease's visualization is now Yasmani Grandal's helmet. If that's what gets you from point A to point B, that's awesome. But to have that kind of hatred directed at you.
That's awful.
Why? Like, to the people who talk negatively, who might be listening to this station about the athletes you see, and if you said something to them, or to us, ask yourself at the end of the day what you did. You feel good about yourself? Something tells me you don't. Try it the other way. See how it goes. I can't get over that stuff.
Well, that's part of our lives and social media, too. And that just means we have to properly curate the feed to remove certain people from the conversation.
No. You don't get to speak without consequences just because we have certain jobs. That's not how it works either.
Unfortunately, people do. At least on Twitter. There aren't really any consequences for anything like that.
I don't want to make it about that. But I think to do what they were doing to Giolito when he was struggling, like, come on. Really? That's sad.
Must help him feel all the better for having emerged from it and to be on top of the world the way that he was. It gives him, I mean, not that he's out there trying to prove the haters wrong, but it has to be satisfying, because I don't think any of the people sending those messages, they're probably already, they're going to pretend they never said it and they're just cheering for the White Sox and are marching down the street because their team is winning. It would be, but like you say, it's not necessarily as much about that as it is the triumph of the will for an athlete being able to figure things out. There's always something satisfying about that, especially going worst to first. Especially being, statistically the worst pitcher in baseball, and then having that level, that dramatic improvement. When we come back, I want you to hear again, we heard from Thad Young earlier in the show talking about his Bulls experience. There is some great sound from Thad Young about one of this weekend's Basketball Hall of Fame enshrinees, his personal story of an encounter with Kevin Garnett. That is remarkable. You're going to want to hear it next on The Score.
Molly
and Haw here, mornings 5 to 9.
More and more of you are getting back in the car and driving to work every day.
Remember to turn on The Score in your car when you start your commute. We'll be right there with you talking Chicago sports.
So take us with you on your way to work.
Molly and Haw, mornings 5 to 9 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
An Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Yeah, I remember my Minnesota pre-draft workout, and I first walked into the gym, and KG was in there drenched in sweat, cussing himself out, cussing the trainers out, and, getting after it doing the workout. And I thought he was the craziest person in the world, but I just realized that his mentality was just different. He was an animal, a beast, a guy who, was willing to do whatever it took to win. And those are, the things that I admire about guys like KG.
Yeah, with every story that you hear about Kevin Garnett, I'm sure you'll hear a lot more this weekend. He may have actually had a little bit of legitimate dissociation, or I don't know about technically split personality, but his basketball persona, especially during games where apparently he wouldn't remember certain things he did or said because he was just operating on a completely different wavelength at sometimes. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've taken psychology, and I'm sure all the terms have changed. The DSM has changed, but there may be something there, legit.
Yeah, but it was also purposeful. So that makes it a little different. And he went purposefully into beast mode and also reminded us that anything is possible.
It's Kobe, it's Duncan, and it's Garnett. Is that right?
I need to look, but I do appreciate the love for Kevin Garnett. And one of my biggest takeaways from KG when I was covering the Rockets was when Kevin McHale's daughter had passed. When McHale and KG had that moment on the court because he was his coach in Minnesota. That was one of those incredibly humane moments from Kevin Garnett to have that and be there for him. That was something that I felt watching it. Like, we all think of him as this big competitor all the time and the beast mode and even going back to his high school days. But to see that too was always something that really stuck with me.
I also think, too, that I hope this is a takeaway from this weekend, that the example set by both Kobe and Garnett in being league historians, of going out of their way to understand basketball history, to know the names, to watch the VHS tapes, to have seen the people who came before them and what they did and what they meant. And they didn't have to do that. A lot of athletes don't care to and don't have to, but they wanted to. And it made their experience a richer one and allowed them to be more stewards of the game's history.
I get goosebumps thinking about what Michael Jordan is going to say. And the class is Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Eddie Sutton, the longtime college coach, Rudy Tomjanovich. On the women's side, you have Tamika Catchings, the NBA champion. She's also a four-time Olympic gold medalist. Kim Mulkey, Barbara Stevens. And Kim Mulkey just left Baylor for LSU in a very wave-making move, but that's another story for another day. Garnett, you know, he's one of those people you hear the high school stories about once you move to Chicago. And those were amazing, too.
Yep. Oh, and I just saw a press release from the desk of Jim Boylan, who says now that Rudy Tomjanovich is going into the Hall of Fame, that technically he's kind of a Hall of Famer also. So he has just sent out that press release from his official stationery from his office.
We got bulls across our chest.
Yeah. Rudy was at a Bulls practice randomly one day.
Yep.
And I was like, What? And it's because they still have a very close relationship, I guess,
yeah. And Jim Boylan, I think his office is also set up in a broom closet in a hallway at Mar-a-Lago. When we come back, we're going to do transition with the Lawrence Holmes Show. I believe it is Mark Grody sitting in once again, if we have a Dave the Cat update, as Jay Zawoski.
Dave the Cat has taken over from Mark Grody.
Looks back at the schedule to determine actually who it is, and he can now tell us.
Lawrence is on the schedule, but he was on there yesterday too, so it's a mystery.
Ooh, we don't
what?
Know.
What? Mystery host?
We'll transition. Yes, that's next on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on the score.
I think it's just pretty incredible if you do want to zoom out and look at it big picture with all the things that have happened to the White Sox, where they still are. It really is a testament to how talented the team is, how bad the division is. Like that's part of it.
Which is why they can survive and win their division, even with their manager costing them 2 or 3 games every 30.
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score, an Odyssey station.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too.
Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.